Now, as you may have heard on the news earlier, the writer, musician and broadcaster Kathleen Watkins died earlier today in Dublin. Ms. Watkins had just turned 90 and she has died 5 years after her husband, the RTE broadcaster Gay Byrne, who passed away in November 2019. Like her husband, she too was an RTE broadcaster and presenter and was across many shows during her time.
Hello everyone and welcome to the City Hall in Cork. This is the occasion of the 36th International Choral Competition. The Abbey Life Trophy Competition is the big event here and we do hope you'll stay and enjoy it with us.
Well, our arts and media correspondent Evelyn O'Rourke is on the line. Evelyn, she was a woman of many talents. Will you remind us of her fascinating life and times?
Yes, I suppose the public feel they know her in so many ways because they knew her on screen and off screen, because on screen she had that career you talked about there where she presented so many programmes over the years. But really she started out as that harpist, that folk musician with great acclaim. But she was actually the first continuity announcer that we saw on screen the night the television Éireann launched on New Year's Eve in 1961. So she had that kind of, you know, moment in her life and it was reflected and talked about for years afterwards. So then she went on, she says, to, you know, enjoy her own broadcasting career, her writing. She did a love of poetry, for example. But she also talked about the fact that she focused so much on supporting Gay Byrne in his extraordinary career at the helm there of the Late Late Show for 37 years and indeed on the Radio 1 morning programme for so long. And she talked about the fact that showbiz stopped at the door, Rachel, that their family home was a happy family home where she reared, obviously, and they raised their two girls, Crona and Susie. So then in later years, herself and Gay left Howth. They moved to Sandymount. And then she'd obviously had grandchildren at this point and was really enjoying storytelling with them. And within the time of spending time with them, they all kind of created this character, Piggine. And that was really her next chapter, where she became the author of those successful children's books, Piggine, in later years, winning an Impulse Book Award as well. So a woman of many, many talents with great acclaim and awards to her belt too.
And our sympathies to her family and friends. Evelyn, thank you very much for that.
Viagra Connect helps you get and keep an erection. Contains sildenafil for men aged 18 and over. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet a day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability.
The Black Friday buzz is on. Hoping to pick up a new TV, laptop or some nice jewellery for a steal? All things burglars would love to get their hands on too. Make sure to protect your home and everything in it with a phone watch alarm. We respond within 15 seconds, calling the homeowners, neighbours, and then the guards. Get the alarm burglars fear for just €29 this whole Black Friday month. Don't be alarmed. Be phone watched. Offer ends November 30th. Monitoring fees and terms apply. See phonewatch.ie.
It's almost 1 o'clock on RTE Radio 1 with Cork and Dublin airports, supporting 128,000 jobs across Ireland.
It's the news at 1 on Radio 1. This is Rachel English. Good afternoon. The headlines this Thursday lunchtime. The Dáil meets for the final time before the election campaign begins. Europe's leaders are facing up to Donald Trump's victory at a summit in Hungary. And the broadcaster, writer and musician Kathleen Watkins has died aged 90. The news is read now by Kate Carolyn.
There were bruising exchanges in the Dáil this lunchtime ahead of Taoiseach Simon Harris declaring a general election tomorrow afternoon. Taoiseach Micheál Martin clashed with Sinn Féin TD Piers Doherty over claims that the coalition was wasting public monies, and also with the Social Democrats leader Holly Cairns on housing. Our political correspondent Paul Cunningham reports.
This is the last day of the 33rd Dáil and there was sound and fury at the final leaders' question session, with the outgoing Ceann Comhairle Seán O'Farrill having to intervene on several occasions to restore order. Sinn Féin's finance spokesperson, Piers Doherty, raised the €9 million allocated in the budget for mobile phone pouches for school students, saying people were not told that there would be a €2 million yearly top-up to replace up to 100,000 pouches annually. Taoiseach Micheál Martin rejected his claim that Education Minister Norma Foley had misled the Dáil and described himself as a long-term advocate of public health, and he believes social media is the public threat of our time, particularly for children. The Social Democrats leader, Holly Kearns, accused the government of turning the housing crisis into a housing disaster, adding that the government's promises on affordable home delivery was not only an abuse of language, it was a con, she charged. In reply, the Taoiseach Micheál Martin said that by any objective standard, there'd been huge progress in the area of housing, stating more had been delivered in the 4.5 years term of this government than in the previous 9 years. The Dáil exchanges may have now concluded, but the topics will continue to be debated in the general election campaign. Paul Cunningham, RT News, Leinster House.
US President Joe Biden is set to address Americans, vowing a peaceful transfer of power to Donald Trump after his election win over Kamala Harris. Mr. Biden will speak in the Rose Garden of the White House at 4 p.m. Irish time to discuss the election results and the transition to Mr. Trump's second term. Our correspondent Fiona Mitchell reports.
In his first public remarks since the re-election of Donald Trump to the Oval Office, sitting US President Joe Biden will make a statement later this afternoon. Mr. Biden has invited Mr. Trump to a meeting in the White House in a bid to ensure the smooth transition of power following what was a divisive and polarizing presidential campaign. The unsuccessful Democratic candidate, Kamala Harris, last night sought to console her supporters, saying that though she conceded the election, she did not concede the fight, as she vowed to continue working towards the vision of America which she believes is possible. President-elect Donald Trump is due to begin naming his top team in the coming days, amid speculation that individuals such as tech billionaire Elon Musk could be given roles in his new administration. Mr. Trump will be officially inaugurated in Washington on January 20th.
The Taoiseach, Simon Harris, has acknowledged that the risk of a transatlantic trade shock had increased, but he described US President-elect Donald Trump as transactional and that he would understand the US-EU trade is a two-way relationship. The Taoiseach was speaking on arrival at the European Political Community Summit in Budapest, where 45 European leaders are assessing the impact of the Trump victory. From Budapest, our Europe editor Tony Connolly reports.
Europe has much to process. The return of Donald Trump, the collapse of the German coalition, and leaders like host Viktor Orban, who believe Trump's election should inspire Europe to take an illiberal course, including abandoning Ukraine to Russia's conquering impulses. Trump's campaign threat to slap 10% tariffs on European exports, not to mention his likely rejection of global efforts on climate change, further worry EU leaders. Messages of congratulations were tempered with the hope that Europeans could appeal to his better nature. Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said she'd worked with Mr. Trump during his first term, and it was important that the EU and US work together to assess their shared interests. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte pointed out that it was Donald Trump in his first term who'd badgered European NATO members to increase defence spending, and that had happened. The Taoiseach too described the president-elect as a transactional businessman who would understand that transatlantic trade was a two-way relationship that benefited both sides in terms of jobs and investment. Tony Connolly, RTE News, Budapest.
A woman who alleges she was raped by mixed martial arts fighter Conor McGregor at a Dublin hotel 6 years ago has said she told a friend to delete all her text messages because she was afraid for her life. Nikita Hand has alleged in her civil action against Mr. McGregor and another man, James Lawrence, that Mr. McGregor raped her on the 9th of December in 2018. Vivian Traynor reports.
Under cross-examination for a second day, Nikita Hand agreed with defence counsel Remy Farrell that she told a friend to delete all her text messages. Ms. Hand said she probably did because she also told others to do so because she was afraid for her life. She agreed that she had told Gardaí that the friend, Danielle Keeley, who was with her at the time of the alleged offence, didn't want to say anything. She denied she was reluctant for Gardaí to speak to Ms. Keeley, but said she was worried about her because she knew Ms. Keeley was scared too and that Conor McGregor knew where she lived. Ms. Hand was questioned again about CCTV footage of her movements in the Beacon Hotel. She said she didn't want to watch the footage again as it was deeply disturbing. She was drunk and vulnerable. Defence counsel Remy Farrell suggested the reason she did not want to see the footage again was because it flatly contradicted the story she had told. Ms Hand broke down in the witness box as she replied, "That CCTV does not take away what happened to me in that room. I know what happened. I was brutally raped and battered, and the CCTV cannot take that away." Vivian Traynor, RT News at the High Court.
The writer, musician and broadcaster Kathleen Watkins has died at the age of 90, 5 years after her husband, RTE broadcaster Gay Byrne, who died in November 2019. Ms Watkins is survived by her two daughters, Susie and Crona, sons-in-law and grandchildren. And now the weather.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Grant. From HVO biofuel compatible condensing boilers to heat pumps and underfloor heating. Trust Grant to heat your home. Visit grant.ie.
Mainly dry and cloudy today, with the best of any sunny breaks over the northern half of the country. There may be some drizzle at times in the south and southwest. Highest temperatures of 12 to 16 degrees. Rachel.
Kate, thank you. That's Kate Carolyn, who, by the way, is with us today because Brian Jennings is otherwise occupied. He's receiving a Professional Excellence Award from the Journalism and Communications Faculty at Griffith College in Dublin. So from all of us, many congratulations, Brian. Now, coming up after the break, we'll be hearing from Leinster House as the 33rd Doyle meets for the final time. We'll also be looking ahead to the campaign and asking how you can make sure you're registered to vote. Plus, the morning's evidence from the Conor McGregor case and a tribute to the late Kathleen Watkins.
Where to begin with health insurance? Will I be penalised for changing plans? What orthopaedic cover do I need? And what'll I pay if I go into hospital?
No worries. You don't need to be an authority on health insurance, because that's us, the Health Insurance Authority. Call us or visit hia.ie for free, impartial information on health cover.
Ow! Oh, me back!
If you get back pain, then this may be the backing track of your drive. However, Citroën could help change that. Citroën's advanced comfort seating includes high-density foam with amazing postural and lumbar support as standard. So when it comes to comfort, Citroën's got your back. Visit citroen.ie and book a test drive today.
At Energia, we know you want your business to be the business. The bee's knees, the cream of the crop. Energia can help you save big on your energy costs with flexible and competitive rates that really are the business. Switch at energia.ie/business or call 0818 36 3744. T's and C's apply. Energia, think of the possibilities.
With a high digital online skills course, you'll feel a real difference.
I can listen to all the music I like.
The bus app that's coming out, it's brilliant.
Anything you want to know, it's at your fingertips.
They're small things, but they mean something.
Learn essential online skills with simple, accessible lessons at highdigital.ie or free phone 1800 20 30 30. Brought to you by Vodafone Foundation and Alone. Vodafone, together we can.
Concerned about diabetes? Visit Ireland's largest diabetes exhibition in the Gresham Hotel Dublin on Sunday afternoon, November 10th. Featuring product stands, the latest diabetes technologies, health checks, advice, workshops and more. For more information, visit diabetes.ie. Brought to you by Diabetes Ireland, kindly sponsored by AstraZeneca.
You're welcome back to the news at one. So the phony war is almost over and the 33rd Doyle, which began just as the implications of the pandemic were becoming clear, is sitting for the final time. As the Taoiseach told last night's 6-1 News, the general election will be called tomorrow and will take place on Friday, the 29th of this month. The next Doyle will be larger. There'll be 14 additional TDs and many constituency boundaries have been redrawn. Over the next few days, promises will be honed, canvassing will be ramped up and lampposts will be hidden by a forest of posters. During a testy final leaders' questions, Sinn Féin's Piers Doherty accused the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, of misleading the House over the money being spent on school phone pouches.
Your minister oversees the OPW that spent €336,000 on the bike shed, €1.4 million on a security hut, and you can't stand there and do a punches pilot and wash your hands of it. Your ministers are all over this, the waste of public money, not just on us, but the National Children's Hospital as well. A runaway train, the Minister for Health oversees that project. He's a Fianna Fáil minister. Now, I asked you specific questions. You didn't tell the truth. You kept the information from the public. I ask you, why were we not told that there would be an additional €2 million cost on the phone pouches every single year?
Deputy, could you have explained to me why your party introduced it in Northern Ireland? Would they not on executive?
We didn't.
Oh, sorry, no, you
we didn't.
I mean, the hypocrisy of you. What hypocrisy through the chair? What hypocrisy? This initiative is already in place in Northern Ireland, and the executive of Northern Ireland financed it. And who's the finance minister? Sinn Féin holds the finance ministry. You are doing this for naked political reasons.
Answer the questions.
Please, can we maintain some sort of decorum? I know you're all worked up and excited about undertaking the campaign, but save it for the doorsteps.
Count Corla, Sean O'Farrell there, our political correspondent Paul Cunningham is at Leinster House. Paul, several long-serving TDs have been making their final contributions and perhaps predictably enough, there was a bit of a ding-dong at leaders' questions.
Yeah, I mean, there were four rows because there were four speakers at leaders' questions. So you had Piers Doherty, as you heard there, on accusations of government waste. We had the Social Democrats leader, Holly Cairns, on housing delivery and in particular, as she was saying, an abject failure when it came to affordable provision or provision of affordable housing. You had People Before Profits, Breed Smith, talking about Gaza and issues there. And you had the independent TD, Matt Shanahan, on medical facilities for the South East. So the Taoiseach was battling on all fronts. Temperatures were very raised. But what you basically had was the themes of the election campaign being debated in the Dáil on its last day, and they're going to be taken out onto the streets just ahead of that. One of the interesting things was Breed Smith of People Before Profit. She's the outgoing TD for Dublin South Central. She is not going to be standing again. So in her contribution, just in that last contribution in the past few minutes, she said she was very much looking forward to not banging her head against the Dáil wall, trying to make progress on key issues. And then she quipped, she hoped that her party's councillor, Hazel Dunortún, would get the chance to do the exact same after election 2024.
Talk us then, Paul, through what happens next, because officially speaking, the election won't be called until tomorrow.
Yes, so we have the Taoiseach Simon Harris. He is in Hungary at an EU leaders meeting, which will, well, it's a sort of European leaders meeting first and then an EU leaders meeting. And then he's going to travel back tomorrow from Hungary to Ireland. And we expect him to go to government buildings probably by mid-afternoon. At that point, we anticipate that he's going to announce his intentions of what he's going to do, which is calling the general election. He would then go to Áras an Uachtaráin under the constitution. He has to inform President Michael D. Higgins of his intention, and then he would return to the government buildings around early afternoon. At that point, there could be a Fine Gael, rather than sort of anything done at government buildings, but a Fine Gael press launch, or he could go out on the canvas. Once again, it's quite fluid, but basically you are into the general election campaign proper right there and then. That's what's going to be happening over the next 24 hours, and we will get the chance then, Rachel, to test, you know, some of the great quotes of all time, like Napoleon Bonaparte said, a leader is someone who deals in hope. Is it the case that Simon Harris, as the new leader of Fine Gael, is going to be able to deliver an electoral bounce? Or is it the case, with half of his parliamentary party going, that the new councillor he has are not able to get enough name recognition to get themselves enough first preference votes to be able to sort of deliver seats for the party? And you can do walk through all the rest of the individual, whether it's Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin, Labour, Social Democrats. That's what they're all going to be trying to do. And it all starts tomorrow evening.
Paul, many thanks for that. Paul Cunningham there at Leinster House. Well, the last election was an unprecedented three-way race, with Sinn Féin receiving the largest number of votes, Fianna Fáil just behind and Fine Gael in third. Those tight numbers led to lengthy negotiations on forming a government. So what can we expect this time? Gary Murphy is Professor of Politics at Dublin City University. He's with us in studio. Gary, every campaign throws up surprises. I mean, the last time we had this long-running row, really, about the pension age. But on what issues do you think this election is likely to be fought?
Well, I think the three that Paul mentioned when he spoke to Rachel, housing, health and government waste, which is a really dangerous one for the government. They say it's the little things that trip you up, as Albert Reynolds famously said 30-odd years ago. And those millions spent on the security hut and or less than a million on the bike shed could really come back to haunt the government as the campaign gets into full swing. And I think one other issue that was pertinent to what happened in the United States earlier the week, cost of living. and how people feel at a micro level, as I think from the macro, that the unemployment figures are the employment figures are very good. The sort of the macroeconomic picture is good, and you can see the government will be trumpeting that. But if you're not feeling it in your own pocket, campaigns can quickly go awry for governments.
Mm-hmm. This is it. I mean, it's obviously better for the state to have money than to be broke. But I suppose there's a question to which people might end up saying, listen, if we're so well off, why isn't my life better?
Yeah, or why isn't the housing crisis solved? Or why do I have to wait 24 hours if I go to A&E? This would be very pertinent, I think, in Limerick and across the cities in particular. So there is this curious mix, I suppose I'd describe it as micro and macro, which can affect the government. Now, the government's in a reasonably good position. The poll numbers, particularly for Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, I mean, historically they're bad, but in terms of the last 5 years, they're actually pretty decent. And, and it's been a difficult 9 months in particular for Sinn Féin ever since they sort of called the referendums on care and the family wrong. And then you had the local and European elections. So I think for all parties, it is all to play for. And we just have to wait and see. And thankfully, it's only a 3-week campaign. So, I mean, it seems that we've been in perpetual campaigning for the last few months since Simon Harris took over and after the European and local elections. But 3 weeks, I think, was just about as much as any of us can take.
Is it inevitable that immigration will be an issue this time in a way that it hasn't really been before?
I think so, almost certainly. And we saw a little bit of it with the local elections. And we saw some candidates who we might describe as a far right, although I think they would reject that that label, getting elected, particularly in Dublin City Council. And clearly Fine Gael have moved their position on immigration in relation to what is clearly public disquiet. I mean, a lot of people are very welcoming of immigrants. What they don't like is, to go back to the United States, is illegal immigration and how that impacts on services. And we heard that a lot during the local elections, that people are welcoming in whatever town it might be. But if the services for GPs, for school places are not there, well, I think that is an issue that the government is going to have to factor in. How big of an issue, I think, remains to be decided. I think it will. I think housing and health, these were the one and two issues in 2020. They were the one and two issues in 2016. I mean, not having the children's hospital built is very bad, I think, for the government. That, again, is a difficulty for them. Remember, there was going to be a no-confidence motion in Simon Harris, of all people, when he was Minister for Health, because of the spiralling costs of the children's hospital in, wait for it, January, February of 2020. And here
and
we are, nearly 5 years later. And
all of that precipitated the last election.
Indeed. And that last election, I mean, at the start of it, one would have said that, this is going to be difficult for Sinn Féin. But you mentioned the pension issue, Rachel. You also had the RIC controversy, the commemoration of the RIC at the beginning of the campaign, which kind of... Fine Gael got off to a very bad start and they never really recovered. And I think that'll be something they want to avoid. They have a new leader. We have the famous Harris Hop. One other thing to watch, I think, will be the difficulties of the two leaders, Micheál Martin and Simon Harris, will face when they come up to debate Mary Lou MacDonald here in RTÉ. And I think we're almost inevitably going to see her say, these are Tweedledum and Tweedledee, a line she used in 2020. And that could be a tricky issue for the leaders to face when they're in competition, as they are, I think, almost certainly for last seats all across the state.
Gary, many thanks for that. And we'll have more on the election before the end of the programme. But we're going now to that other election, because 24 hours on from Donald Trump's emphatic victory, he's preparing to pick his top team. Republicans have retaken control of the US Senate. They also lead the contest to control the House of Representatives. But it could take days for a final result to emerge. In the Democrats, the blame game has begun, with one-time presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders saying it was no surprise that a party which had abandoned working class people would find that the working class had abandoned them. Joining us is Julia Manchester, national politics correspondent with The Hill in Washington. Julia, thanks for talking to us. A lot of speculation today about the second Trump term and whether he'll be emboldened or more disciplined. Are there any names in the frame for this second administration?
Yeah, there certainly are. Look, Rick Grenell, a former Trump administration official from his first administration, has been floated for Secretary of State, for example. You've also heard, of course, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. sort of floated in a health and human services capacity. Obviously, that would create quite a bit of backlash, I think, from Democrats and Republicans to an extent because of his controversial past. You've heard Elise Stefanik, Congresswoman from New York and in-house Republican leadership, floated to be potential UN ambassador. That would be huge because we know she has been incredibly critical of, or very supportive, I should say, of Israel and U.S. support of Israel. So a number of names floated, but remember, we're 75 days away. So, we're going to see a lot coming into play. We know that Republicans now have control of the Senate or will have control of the Senate. So that's going to help these nomination processes as well.
And when it comes to Donald Trump's more controversial pledges, like, say, raising tariffs on imports or, say, cutting funding to Ukraine, is it likely, in your assessment, that he will follow through on those pledges?
You know, it's hard to tell. I will say, and, Republicans have argued this, and there is some truth to it. He had a lot of tariffs in place during his first administration, and the Biden administration didn't lift them. So, that's certainly worth noting. Now, whether he puts more in place, we'll see. It could get some pushback from Republicans because there is some evidence to suggest that that could have a negative impact on the economy. We know he's also talking with a lot of economic and business leaders as well. There could be some pushback from them too. Remember, his approach has always been, his aim, he says, is to bring down inflation, create robust economic growth. And there's legitimate questions as to whether tariffs would actually do that. Now, in terms of Ukraine and Russia, that's also going to be an issue within the Republican Party because we know that particularly Republicans in the Senate, and we know that, the people in the running to potentially replace Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, they are more supportive of Ukraine. So you've heard sort of in the news media over the past 24 hours, this language sort of shift up to, oh, we want to talk with Russia and Ukraine to end the war. So he's going to have, potentially some internal disagreements within the Republican Party on how to approach some of these issues.
Julia Manchester of The Hill, thank you very much for talking to us this lunchtime. Now, as we were saying there, the international implications of Donald Trump's return to the White House are becoming clearer. At a summit of European leaders in the Hungarian capital Budapest, there's likely to be intense focus on what his success means for the war in Ukraine and for international trade. Here's what the Finnish Prime Minister Petteri Orpo had to say on his way into the meeting this morning.
I think that we have to give a clear message here today to the United States and the new administration that we support Ukraine as long and as much as needed. The message has to be clear and strong. And the second one is that it's clear that Europe have to do more for its own defense to strengthen it and own security. This is important message to Trump.
On his way into the summit, the Taoiseach Simon Harris described President-elect Donald Trump as transactional and said that he would understand that US-EU trade is a two-way relationship.
Do need to be aware that the risk of a transatlantic trade shock has now increased. I think that is a statement of fact, but we need to work our way through all of these things, and we need to engage with the new administration at a European level, because of course trade is at an EU level.
Taoiseach Simon Harris. For more, let's go to our Europe editor, Tony Connolly. Tony, will you tell us more, first of all, about this summit? Who's meeting and what are they discussing?
Well, Rachel, this is a summit called the European Political Community. Now, this is the fifth version of this format. It was put together initially by President Macron a couple of years ago. So it's the EU 27 leaders, but also about maybe 10, 15, 17 other leaders from non-EU European countries. So Keir Starmer, the British Prime Minister, is here. Leaders from places like Azerbaijan, Turkey, Liechtenstein, Iceland, Norway, and so on. So it's the big continental gathering. And they were due to be talking about migration and energy security and the war in Ukraine. But of course, the one overarching topic now is Donald Trump and what that'll mean for both the European economy and the war in Ukraine. And of course, it's also been overshadowed by the fact that the German coalition has collapsed and Olaf Scholz is under tremendous pressure now from the opposition there to have a no confidence motion or a confidence vote very soon rather than in January. So that is also a big sideshow. And I suppose it is reflective of, this sense that Donald Trump is leading this new populist right-wing wave that is also being surfed by the host country here, Hungary, Viktor Orban, the Prime Minister, making that point, and also reflective of the fact that there has been a surge in the right in Europe, in European elections this year. So it's a real moment of reflection and, I suppose, anxiety for European leaders. And again, like everybody else, they're waiting to see who Donald Trump puts in positions of power within his administration and whether or not he follows through on those threats, both on tariffs and on withdrawing support for Ukraine militarily.
Some interesting comments from leaders on Ukraine this morning. What have they been saying?
I think the one that stood out for me most of all was Mark Rutte, who was the former Dutch Prime Minister. He's now the Secretary General of NATO. And you could see that he was trying a little bit of flattery, saying that, look, when in his first term, Donald Trump was the one who badgered NATO member states to increase defence spending to the 2% target. And he said, as a result of that, NATO member states had done that. Now, I think that's also because of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. So he was trying to say, look, Donald Trump does have a positive influence on transatlantic security, whatever his intentions about Ukraine. President Macron, Emmanuel Macron, spoke about the need for Europe to no longer be outsourcing its security to the United States. And again, Ursula von der Leyen, the European Commission President, saying, look, whatever happens with this new administration, Europe is stronger when it works together. And she talked about how Europe had pulled together during the COVID pandemic and in response to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. But the trouble is, as I mentioned, that Europe isn't now united on Ukraine. You have Viktor Orban, you have the Slovak Prime Minister Robert Fico, all talking now about, oh, look, it's time for peace. But for many people, peace simply means capitulating to Vladimir Putin.
Tony, thank you for that. Tony Connolly there at that summit in Budapest. Back home, a woman who alleges she was raped by the mixed martial arts fighter Conor McGregor at a Dublin hotel 6 years ago has said she told a friend to delete all her text messages because she was afraid for her life. Nikita Hand has alleged in her civil action against Mr. McGregor and another man, James Lawrence, that Mr. McGregor raped her on the 9th of December 2019. Mr. McGregor said Mr. Lawrence of Rafters Road in Drimna denied Ms. Hand's claims. Our courts reporter Vivian Traynor joins us now. Vivian, this was the second day of Nikita Hand's cross-examination. What did she say about what she told her friend in relation to these text messages?
Yeah, Rachel, she was being asked about what she had told her friend Danielle Keeley, who had been in the same penthouse suite at the time of this alleged rape on the 9th of December in 2018. She was asked if she had told Miss Keeley, who was, by her account, in the next room when the alleged rape took place, and if she had said anything to her in the immediate aftermath. And she said when she woke up first, she didn't remember what had happened to her. It was later, after Miss Keeley and Mr. McGregor had left, that things had slowly come back to her. But she did say that she told Miss Keeley later, when she was in a sexual assault treatment unit, that she had been raped. Now, she also agreed with defence counsel Remy Farrell that she had later told Miss Keeley to delete her text messages. Her reply to that question was, I probably did because I told other people to, because I was afraid for my life. She agreed that she had told Gardaí that Miss Keeley probably doesn't want to say anything because Connor dropped her home and she's scared and she knows that he knows where she lives. I don't want to force her. Now, Mr. Farrell suggested to her that this demonstrated some sort of reluctance on her part for the Gardaí to speak to Miss Keeley. And she said, no, she didn't mind if they spoke to her, but she was worried about Miss Keeley. She said, I knew she was scared and I didn't want to put her in a position where she would be frightened because this was not about her. It was about me. And she said she'd no memory of telling another friend all around that time that she'd woken up to find security guards coming into the room, that she had fled the hotel. She believed she was going to be raped and that she believed she was going to be raped by a security guard. She said she had no memory of telling another friend that. She said, obviously, at that time, she was very confused and that she was all over the place.
She was also asked again, Vivian, about the CCTV footage that was shown to the court yesterday.
Yeah, and she's been shown photographs as well of the Beacon Hotel where these alleged events took place. She believed that she had been in the Morgan Hotel that night because she said it was similar decor. They were being driven around and she believed she was going to a party, but she didn't know where she was going and she didn't ask where they were going. Now, she broke down in tears at one point in the witness box. She said she didn't want to view again that CCTV footage that was shown to the jury yesterday from the hotel. There was 45 minutes of it. She said it was deeply disturbing because it wasn't her. She said it's not her character. She was drunk and vulnerable in the footage. And at one point in her evidence today, she said, I should have been looked after. I should have been taken home in that state. Now, it was put to her by Mr. Farrell that the reason that footage was disturbing, the reason she didn't want to look at it again, was because he said it flatly contradicted the story she had told. And her reply to that was, it doesn't take away what happened to me. I know what happened to me in that room. I was brutally raped and battered. And that CCTV does not take away what happened to me. At that stage, she broke down in tears and had to take a break from her evidence. Her cross-examination is continuing.
Vivian, thank you very much for that. Vivian Traynor there at the High Court in Dublin. We'll be returning to the general election after a quick break.
With so much to see and do, what will you discover on a short break in Northern Ireland? You could wander the medieval walled city of Derry before exploring the awe-inspiring Giant's Causeway and Causeway Coastal Route. Dip into Fermanagh's Lakelands or visit the historic city of Armagh. Dive into the depths of Belfast's Titanic experience, then lose yourself in the majestic mountains of Mourne. There's a superb choice of great value hotels and accommodation, plus exciting restaurants and nightlife to suit every pocket. And it's so easy to get to by car and by train. Book your great value short break now at discovernorthernireland.com. Northern Ireland, embrace a giant spirit.
Finding a window of time to get things done can feel impossible. Luckily, there's one window where you can get many things done at once, at your local post office. AIB and Bank of Ireland customers can get their banking done at over 900 post offices nationwide, 6 days a week. Deposit and withdraw your cash, lodge cheques with Giro, all while getting your usual post office stuff ticked off too. Visit your local post office or onpost.com/everydaybanking for more information. OnPost, for your world. Allied Irish Banks PLC and Bank of Ireland are regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
RTE Radio 1.
Just a heartbroken bitch, high heels, 6 inch in the
Ray,
back of the neck,
Lime,
sipping champagne.
Royal Hospital Comenum. Friday, August 22nd. Tickets available this Friday at 10 a.m. Subject to license.
Take this front row seat.
Ray,
baby,
Lime.
Oscar.
Tickets available this Friday.
Music updates on RTE Radio 1.
Hello again, you're with the news at one. This will be a short election campaign and the deadline for postal vote registration is almost upon us. Art O'Leary, Chief Executive of An Coimisiún Toghchán, the Electoral Commission, is on the line. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Rachel. Nice to be with you again.
Not at all. Who's eligible for a postal vote and how do they go about getting one?
Okay, as you mentioned, the timelines are very, very short here because of the nature of the short election campaign. People are probably aware that diplomats and Gardaí and members of the Defence Forces are entitled to vote, but those people with a disability who are unable to attend a polling station on the day of the vote are entitled to a postal vote. Also, students who are away from home studying somewhere else in the state. And also those who, because of their work, they won't be around to be able to attend a polling station. So people like airline pilots, long distance lorry drivers, they're all entitled to a postal vote. They'll get the application form on checktheregister.ie, but the closing date is Sunday. So they really need to do it today. There is some certification involved. You may need your doctor to, if you're applying under disability grounds, you might, it'll need to be certified by your doctor or your university or your employer. We've been out and about for the last month encouraging people to apply for the postal votes, but the moment is now upon us where in a couple of days' time we close for postal voting. And then on Tuesday, it's the deadline for ordinary registration. So it's a very, very busy few days for people working in local authorities who are registering all these new people.
All right. So that deadline is hurtling towards us as well. How do people go about making sure that they're on the electoral register?
Yeah, their first port of call, and I would urge everybody to check the register.ie. It'll take 20 seconds to discover whether you're on the register as well. So it's a very quick check just to be sure. Even if you have voted this year already in the referendums and the local and European Parliament elections, please just check that you're on the register. For those who are new voters, it takes 2 minutes and 57 seconds to register yourself for a vote. So there's a really helpful video on our website. It's a 2 minutes and 57 second video on our website to show people exactly what they have to do. You need your PPS number, your air code and your date of birth. Just fill in your details and in advance of Tuesday, but you'll be added to the register. So this afternoon, while you're waiting for the kettle to boil for your afternoon cup of tea, please go and check the register and sign yourself up. We've had a huge response to our campaigns already this year. I mean, this is our third electoral event this year. And 500,000, over 500,000, half a million people have either registered for the first time or updated their details if they changed address as well. It's a very, very simple system to use. And we're just encouraging people as the clock starts to tick down towards a deadline to make sure that they register to vote.
All right. Like you say, busy times ahead. Art O'Leary, thank you very much for talking to us. Now, as you may have heard on the news earlier, the writer, musician and broadcaster Kathleen Watkins died earlier today in Dublin. Ms. Watkins had just turned 90 and she has died 5 years after her husband, the RTE broadcaster Gay Byrne, who passed away in November 2019. Like her husband, she too was an RTE broadcaster and presenter and was across many shows during her time.
Hello everyone and welcome to the City Hall in Cork. This is the occasion of the 36th International Choral Competition. The Abbey Life Trophy Competition is the big event here and we do hope you'll stay and enjoy it with us.
Well, our arts and media correspondent Evelyn O'Rourke is on the line. Evelyn, she was a woman of many talents. Will you remind us of her fascinating life and times?
Yes, I suppose the public feel they know her in so many ways because they knew her on screen and off screen, because on screen she had that career you talked about there where she presented so many programmes over the years. But really she started out as that harpist, that folk musician with great acclaim. But she was actually the first continuity announcer that we saw on screen the night the television Éireann launched on New Year's Eve in 1961. So she had that kind of, you know, moment in her life and it was reflected and talked about for years afterwards. So then she went on, she says, to, you know, enjoy her own broadcasting career, her writing. She did a love of poetry, for example. But she also talked about the fact that she focused so much on supporting Gay Byrne in his extraordinary career at the helm there of the Late Late Show for 37 years and indeed on the Radio 1 morning programme for so long. And she talked about the fact that showbiz stopped at the door, Rachel, that their family home was a happy family home where she reared, obviously, and they raised their two girls, Crona and Susie. So then in later years, herself and Gay left Howth. They moved to Sandymount. And then she obviously had grandchildren at this point and was really enjoying storytelling with them. And within the time of spending time with them, they all kind of created this character, Piggeen. And that was really her next chapter, where she became the author of those successful children's books, Piggeen, in later years, winning an Impulse Book Award as well. So a woman of many, many talents with great acclaim and awards to her belt too.
And our sympathies to her family and friends. Evelyn, thank you very much for that.
Sport on RTE Radio 1.
And with the sport this afternoon, it's John Kenny.
Afternoon to you, Rachel. Ireland's women's side have been drawn to face Turkey, Slovenia and Greece in Group B2 of the Women's Nations League. If Ireland win their group, they will be promoted to League A. The results of the Nations League, which begins in February, and the final standings will determine seeding for the World Cup qualifying rounds. Ireland also face a two-leg playoff with Wales later this month in their quest to qualify for the Euro 2025 finals in Switzerland. Shane Duffy's back in the Republic of Ireland men's squad ahead of this month's Nations League doubleheader against Finland and England. Captain Seamus Coleman returned to the squad having missed the last three internationals with injury, while there's also call-ups for the Stoke City pair, Andy Moran and Tom Cannon. But there's no place for the Wolves player Matt Doherty and Nottingham Forest defender Andrew Obabadile, while Gavin Bazunu, Chidozie Ogbeni, Will Smallbone, Jack Taylor and Robbie Brady are all out injured. Having won 2-1 in Helsinki last month, Ireland will host Finland at Lansdowne Road next Thursday before the Nations League campaign concludes against England at Wembley Stadium on Sunday, November the 17th. Meanwhile, captain Kylian Mbappe has been left out of the French squad for their upcoming games against Israel and Italy. France head coach Didier Deschamps did not say whether Mbappe, who played with his club Real Madrid in the Champions League on Tuesday, was injured, arguing his choice was a one-off decision. Shamrock Rovers could take a giant step towards the knockout stage of the UEFA Conference League as they welcome the Welsh champions TNS to Tallaght Stadium this evening for the 5:45 kickoff. The Hoops are looking to maintain their unbeaten start to the league phase of the competition, knowing that a victory would take them to 7 points in three games, having drawn with the Cypriot side Applewell in their opener, following it up with an impressive 4-1 win away at Larne. Elsewhere, Chelsea face FC Noah, that's at 8 o'clock, while in the Europa League, Galatasaray face Spurs, Olympiacos host Rangers, both of those at 5:45. Manchester United face PAOK at 8 o'clock. And the Abu Dhabi Golf Championship got underway this morning on the DP World Tour. England's Tommy Fleetwood finished on 10 under par. He leads by 1. Rory McIlroy 5 under after his first round of 67. Tom McKibben is 4 under. Shane Lowry is 3 under. More sport on the RTE News app and rte.ie. Rachel.
John, thank you. And that's the news this Thursday lunchtime. Tommy O'Sullivan was on sound today and the broadcast coordinator was Stephen Higgins. The editor was Laura Whelan. Liveline with Joe Duffy will be here in a couple of minutes. But for me, Rachel English and all the team on the News at One, have a good afternoon.
Introducing the Ford Suites, Ireland's newest conference and events destination brought to you by the Johnstown Estate. A four-star luxury hotel and spa, centrally located and designed with exquisite experiences in mind. Catering for large-scale events, the Ford Suites is stylish, sophisticated and state-of-the-art with an LED video wall, private entrance, grounds for team building and more. The Ford Suites. Ignite your aspirations. Discover more at thejohnstownestate.com.
Mr. Blue Sky, please tell us why.
The EuroMillions jackpot is an estimated 125 million euro.
Play responsibly in-store, in-app or at lottery.ie.
The National Lottery. It could be you.
Don't miss Academy Award winner Cillian Murphy in what critics are calling his finest performance yet.
She asked me to get her out.
And what did you say?
That it wasn't up to me.
Based on the best-selling novel by Claire Keegan.
Do you ever get worried?
People can make things difficult for you.
Cillian Murphy's performance could move mountains, says The Telegraph.
What if it was one of ours?
They're not our girls.
An extraordinary performance, says The Times.
Don't you ever question it?
Five stars, says The Irish Independent. Small things like these in cinemas now.
Embark on a magical Christmas adventure with Ballet Ireland's national tour of Nutcracker Sweeties, running from November 2nd until December 14th, presented in association with EY Ireland. See Ballet Ireland's Nutcracker Sweeties live at the Gaiety Theatre from November 13th to 16th. Tickets from €12. Additional fees may apply. Tickets for all nationwide venues on sale now at balletireland.ie. Supported by the Arts Council.
RTE.
Supporting the arts.
Ek taku leis na halianna.
Join the RTE Concert Orchestra and renowned West End vocalist for an unforgettable tribute to the last 50 years of Elton John's music, led by conductor Richard Balcombe. With powerful performances of iconic hits like I'm Still Standing, Circle of Life, Candle in the Wind, Rocket Man and more, you can tell everybody that this is your song. The music of Elton John. Thursday the 28th of November at the National Concert Hall Dublin. See rte.ie/co for more.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Refresh your home with the latest colours and designs in curtains and bedding, in-store or at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and a very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number, as always, and the sad passing today of Kathleen Watkins. That's the first female face on Irish, if not the first face on Irish national television on New Year's Eve in 1961, and had a stellar broadcasting career for many decades here in RTE. Also wrote fantastic children's books, which she loved, Piggeen and Holt, and curated poetry collections. Obviously, brilliant musician, harpist, Ireland's foremost harpist at one stage. Of course, mother to Susie and Crona born, and granny to her grandchildren, who she, Nana Kit, as she was known to her grandchildren, deeply loved. And a great friend to many, many people, including Mary Louise O'Donnell, former senator, academic. Mary Louise, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Joe.
Sad, a sad day for you. Mary, you knew her so well.
Oh, I did. Oh, she was a wonderful friend. She was a wonderful friend for 40 years.
Wow.
40 years. We used to spend our time up in Donegal in the summers, and we had a group of people who walked, the Blue Stack Rambler Walkers, and we spent kind of all our private time there, walking time, talking time, and both Gay and Kathleen became personal friends of mine, but personal private friends, you know, like not a...
Yeah.
Not a public friendship. It was a very private friendship, twice and three times a year. And then when Gay died, we continued our friendship. And I loved her all the days of her life. She was very much what you described there, a Renaissance woman.
Yeah.
I tend to think of the Renaissance man, but this was a Renaissance woman. She was possibly the most cultured person and the most interested in culture and the arts and language and art, music and theatre and poetry, and was interested in young people who were writing and in young writers and storytellers, and interested in singers, and sat at the Fechtule and went to Fechin and was interested in the theatre and in film. I mean, she was really a Renaissance woman and a pleasure to be around.